weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Big thanks to Graham and Andrew for driving us through the afternoon. It's Friday, the 14th of February, and to some people that's Valentine's Day. You're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the official chart show at 7pm, we're live around the grounds as the League of Ireland returns. Alan Colley is very excited and he's in studio to set us up for the season ahead. Plus, we'll look back on Shamrock Rovers' big win in Europe last night. All of that, along with Fergal Brennan on the Premier League, Brendan Devaney on the Allianz League, and that big one, of course, Kerry versus Dublin. Jane Mangan will also mark our cards in racing. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
So, Alan Colley, are you going to spend Valentine's Day watching a League of Ireland game?
Well, what do you think, Marie? Is that even a question? What is Valentine's Day?
Valentine's Day is when really nice things happen, like the League of Ireland returns.
Well, I did my little thing that I had to do for Valentine's Day. Not that I had to do it, but I did it.
Careful now, Alan.
I did it. So, yeah, I'm heading off to a match this evening, Marie, the opening night of the season. So for all those lovers that are heading out for dinner, I'm going to what I love, going to the match, Shelburne against Derry City, and a great match to open up the season as well. When you think of the drama we had at the end of last season, that was the last night. I think it was 105 days ago, if I'm correct, Marie.
Correct.
And to open up the season, obviously with two teams who you would think have aspirations to win a league title, especially Shelburne, are going to try and defend theirs. But I think Derry will be in the mix as well. So to have both teams going at it, I suppose, on the opening night, I think it should be a cracking game.
We'll get into that in a little more detail very shortly because Tony O'Donoghue is at Tulka Park. But let's just recap on last night's football drama and the display of Shamrock Rovers in that Conference League against Mulday. Al, how impressive were they?
Extremely impressive, Marie, to be honest with you. And they've been impressive throughout the whole European run, to be fair to them. And when you think, obviously, the season ended and there was a big gap since their last game, to put in the performance that they did last night, I think is testimony to Stephen Bradley and the professionalism of that group and the preparations that went into it. Because I know they had a couple of friendlies in the build-up. You look at the lads in terms of their fitness levels as well and the condition that they're all in, despite them being off for so many weeks. And then I suppose the biggest compliment I can give Stephen Bradley is the bravery that he showed to play a 16-year-old up front who he just signed in the off-season. And I know he's the story, Michael Noonan obviously scoring the goal, which is an unbelievable feat and achievement for him. But I do think Stephen Bradley deserves an enormous amount of credit because Johnny Kenny was leading the line for them throughout the opening part of the campaign, ended up being the top scorer before Christmas in the campaign in Europe and was having an unbelievable season for them. And what he was giving the team in terms of the threat that he offers in behind as well because of the pace. Of course, Johnny, as we all know, had to go back to his parents' club, Celtic, and there would have been a big void there. And in the build-up to this match, I was wondering what Stephen Bradley was going to do in terms of filling that void, because it's very hard to replace the likes of a Johnny Kenny. We all know a few weeks ago that he signed, obviously, Noonan, and spoke, even when he signed, that he's going to be part of the first team straight away. I didn't think for one second he'd start in the game last night, Marie, I have to be honest with you.
Not many
probably did. So the fact that he was brave enough to play him in that game, give him the confidence that he had given him, obviously, and what he had seen in the weeks up to this, and then for the young fella to repay him and put in the performance that he did, not only with the goal, I think his all-round general performance for a 16-year-old leading the line in a European tie is absolutely amazing. So I think huge, huge credit goes to Stephen Bradley, Shamrock Rovers, and especially young Noonan.
Yeah, and he was untested as well, or unproven. I know he was doing it on the international stage and he'd been representing Ireland. He'd been linked with Manchester City and we'd seen a little bit of him, but like he hadn't really played a lot of men's football, Al, so he must have done some job in training to catch the eye of Stephen Bradley like that.
Well, I think only one appearance he made for St. Pat's, so no men's football. It was all, obviously, youth-level football. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen him, or you have to be honest with you. I like to think I'm across things in terms of football in this country. I hadn't seen the young fella play. I had only heard about reports and just, I suppose, the prospect that he was. And at that age, that's all anybody is.
Yeah.
So Stephen would have known him before this as well, and I think he had him earmarked to try and get him in last year. There was negotiations or talks. For whatever reason that didn't happen, so I think it was probably ongoing throughout the year, and I think they've made no bones about it, the fact that the family wanted him to go back to Shamrock Rovers as well, or be a part of Shamrock Rovers with Stephen Bradley. So as soon as Stephen signed him, he obviously said straight out that he's going to be part of the first team. Now I thought that's a manager obviously saying that, and he would have been part of the first team, but not to start in their biggest game of the season, which is obviously so early in the season as well. So I think he deserves enormous amount of credit. And your point about what he had done to obviously catch Stephen's eye, he has obviously caught his eye before this. But in terms of the preparation, he spoke after the match last night about the trouble he was causing the likes of Daniel Cleary, Pico Lopez in training and the games that they were having. And he said he had his mind made up 2 weeks ago that he was starting him. So even to keep that under wraps as well, he didn't tell the young fella too early. He'd probably only told him a day before. Maybe he said he held him from the kid. But the performance that he put in, and you just can't underestimate how big of an achievement it is for a 16-year-old playing away from home in a European tie against experienced players, and to have the maturity to go out and not only handle the occasion, but also to show the maturity in terms of how you actually play the game as well. Marie, I thought he was fantastic. And the bigger picture is the Shamrock Rovers have put themselves in an unbelievable position now. I think as well, we shouldn't also underestimate the fact that McAniff was back in the team last night as well. He struggled throughout last year with injuries after he came back from Australia. Mandrio has a pre-season under his belt. I think Mandrio on his day is the best player in the league. He's an unbelievable talent, Marie. And also, I think one of the signings he made on top of Noonan, he brought in Matt Healy, an under-21 international who we've obviously seen up close and personal with the 21s. And he put in a mature performance in that midfield as well. I think he's an upgrade on what they've had also. So everybody's speaking about Shelburne and St. Pat's for the league, and rightly so, they'll be in the mix. And I mentioned Derry a moment ago, but I still think Shamrock Rovers are the team to beat.
Okay, well, another man who is across all things of football in this country just happens to be on the line. Tony O'Donoghue is there. Tony, Alan hadn't seen Michael Noonan. Had you seen him before last night?
No, I hadn't. And I was so impressed with him. And, you know, I have to say, I've mentioned and I've warned before about height and young players. And I do still think we have to be careful. But to have Mason Melia, you know, with St. Pat's at the moment, and now Michael Noonan with Shamrock Rovers, and, you know, which of them is going to explode onto the scene first? I hope it works for them. And, like, the performance last night was really mature. I hope he didn't get homework this weekend, because he's got a big match on Sunday as well, of course, and that'll be at the Aviva Stadium when Bohemians entertain Shamrock Rovers in a Dublin derby that's breaking records. So isn't it great? Valentine's night, and we're all going to spend some time with our loved ones, me and Alan at Tolka Park anyway, that's for sure.
Alan got a haircut as well, Tony, by the way.
For Tony.
That's his league title haircut, yeah. But just walking around Tolka Park, and you know, there was a lot of talk about the last Merseyside derby at Goodison. Tolka Park is a very special place as well, in terms of, I suppose, just the ghosts of football past sort of just, you know, sweep through the place as well. And as they're getting ready for the start of a new season as league champions, and flags are being put up on the far stand for the most fanatical of the Riverside fans to cheer on the champions as they enter the fray. Obviously, they had the President's Cup last week as well. People said the pitch wasn't great last week. Looks quite good to me tonight, I have to say. And really looking forward to seeing Shelburne, the champions, try to defend their title against a Derry City team, you know, who've made loads of changes. They, I suppose, Rory Higgins could consider himself jilted, and they've gone for an older man in Tiernan Lynch, or a new man certainly, and he's going for a more experienced lineup, you can say, you know, including the likes of Northern Ireland internationals Liam Boyce and Shane Ferguson. So it'll be interesting to see how Derry line up tonight, and whether they will be title contenders again this year. They, you know, as we all recall, there was a time when they would have been favourites with a couple of games to go last season, and then to have it snatched away in the last couple of weeks of one of the most compelling seasons we've seen. And for Shelburne to win it, it was something for the old romantics, really, isn't it? And everyone is talking about the League of Ireland. It's become finally on trend. And, you know, I've a regret, I have to say, that unfortunately RTE won't be covering the game on television or indeed on radio tonight. And we'd like to wish our broadcast partners well in Virgin Media and News Talk in taking on the baton. But, you know, to see the young players coming through, the likes of Melia, and last night it was just magnificent to see how well Shamrock Rovers and Michael Noonan did, and hopefully they can carry it through to next week now and get through another round of the competition, because their success. And I agree with Alan. All the previews that I've been reading were almost universally saying St. Pat's. But I think you're absolutely right, Alan. I think Matt Healy was excellent in midfield last night. For a Rovers team that don't start Gary O'Neill, I always think he's the first name on the team sheet. But they held him in reserve. And yeah, they look like, for the moment, Stephen Bradley has cracked the code again. And hopefully they can go through next week in Europe. And I'm really looking forward to the Aviva on Sunday. I mean, what a game that's going to be. Bulls and Rovers, the classic Dublin derby, you probably would say. And at the Aviva Stadium, 30,000 people. Wow.
Yeah, 30,000 and counting as well. It's great to see the signs coming out every day or so that they're adding 1,000 here and there, which is super. But Al, when we look at tonight's game, the one that yourself and Tony are going to be spending time together at a little bit later on.
I've got you chocolates, Alan, by the way.
Tony, I would, actually. You never let me down.
He's
every
flowers
year.
Here for you as well now, so don't you worry. But Shelburne, look, we saw what they did last year, and Al, they did have their flaws as well, and they were exposed particularly towards the end of the season there, but they managed to hang on in there and seal that title. Are we going to see an evolved Shelburne, do you think?
Well, I saw them last Friday, Marie, and I was most impressed with them. I really was, in the President's Cup. And they've strengthened in the off-season. They really have. I think they've two players now for every position. There's depth to their squad, which I felt wasn't there last year. And one player to watch out for anybody that doesn't know is the centre-forward assigned, Mipo Adebeku, who it looks like, if Damien is as brave as he was last week, and that was Drogheda, and it'd be interesting to see tonight, but it looks like he might play the two up top with him and Sean Boyd, which will be a force to be reckoned with, because Sean, as we know, was a big influence on that team in terms of his physical prowess, but also Meepo, he's so sharp, he really is, and looks so fit. And that was the one thing that struck me as well, Marie. I think they're back before Christmas, so it just goes to show there'll be no resting on their laurels with Damien Duff. He spoke already in the lead up to the game just about the desire and the hunger that he still has to try and retain that title because of how good it was for them last year. As I said, he strengthened the team, and I do think they'll be thereabouts, 100% they'll be thereabouts. I think it's a tough game for them to start. I think Derry, Tiernan and Lynch coming in. One thing that I think has impressed me with him, he's getting a bit of criticism for the age profile of the players that he signed, but I think he signed very well in those players that are a little bit older and the experience that they've added, the likes of Liam Boyce, the likes of Ferguson at left full. I think they'll add hugely to the squad that was already there. He's kept Riley in midfield, he's kept the goalkeeper Brian Maher. There was a lot of speculation about them maybe moving on, so I think Derry will be in the mix as well. But
and
I definitely
Robbie Benson, I think, was a really important signing as well. Look what he's capable of doing, a three-time Premier League winner.
Yeah, big sign of Robbie Benson as well. So Derry, I think, have strengthened also. I know Rory Higgins has moved on, but it'll be interesting to see another new manager in the league, how will he fare? So these two teams tonight, I think, will be banging the mix come the end of the season, Marie.
Now, Tony, while we're on the topic of loves, what about Cork City? Galway United tonight, quarter to eight.
So delighted that they're back where they belong. And I'm hoping for a massive crowd. I'm hearing that it's going to be a big crowd at Turner's Cross as well. I suppose they made their big moves like the end of last season preparing for this, and that was probably a smart thing to do, getting Rory Keating back, bringing Shawnee Maguire in. But Charlie Lyons has been the outstanding player there. Cathal O'Sullivan, another young player with immense talent. Guys, again, let's not overhype the young players, but you know, we're quietly hopeful that as the years go on with, you know, better technical coaching, better standards in the League of Ireland, keeping players at home for that little bit longer, that we are developing players of a standard that can improve Irish football at all levels and up and finally onto the international stage. But yeah, I'm hoping for a great result from Cork today. I'm hoping to see them in a couple of weeks as well, and for John Caulfield to be coming back as well. And let's not forget, some people I've read calling him a dinosaur. What he has done with Ollie Horgan for Galway has been absolutely outstanding, and I think Galway fans appreciate that. But I think he'll get a warm welcome in Cork this evening.
It just goes to show, Marie, as well, and on Tony's point, the rise in the league, and we all know the trajectory it's on and where it's going, and the hype and the interest is amazing. I've never seen it like this in terms of the build up. But I'm coaching with the young fellas, and for the first time I used the league as an example the other night of the likes of Mason Melia, young Noonan, young O'Sullivan at Cork, that these kids that we're coaching now at 11, 12, 13, that you're not looking across the water to England now. If they keep going on the path that they're going, that the league will be in such a place in 5, 6, 7 years if it keeps going the way it's going, that they'll be lining out for the likes of St. Pat, Shelburne, Cork, with huge opportunities for them. And it's lovely to be able to say that, Marie. When we were growing up as kids, it was always just about across the water, and if you could get over there, it's great. great. But I think the league is in such a brilliant place and only going one way, that for all the young kids that are playing in the DDSL now, or down in the country, or whatever county they're from, or whatever league they're playing in, the opportunities to have now in terms of going on to maybe play, not just in England, but a League of Ireland level, in a really professional, hopefully well-established industry by the time it comes another 5, 6, 7 years, if it keeps going the way it's going.
Well, that's a realistic aspiration.
Let's not forget that. Yeah, I think we always have to remember, we've been talking about getting a proper football industry in this country, and there hasn't been joined up thinking in that regard. But when you get a Mason Melia deal, that will trickle back down, more than trickle, that will flood back down into the clubs that Mason has been involved in, and obviously his club at the moment, St. Pat's, and other clubs that he's been involved with, at the likes of the Gavin Bazunu deal. And when you think that, you know, Michael Noonan won't be at Shamrock Rovers forever, hopefully he'll have a brilliant season, and will go on to higher levels, and the money will flood back into the system, which will increase the academies and the development squads, and again, that's all kind of cyclical, if we do finally have what can amount to a football industry in this country.
It's only going one way. It's not going backwards now. This is it. This is it. Here we are.
Turning point.
It is, honestly. I've been banging the drum about this for years and years. Tony's covered it for years and years. We've never seen it the way it is. And as I said, it's on such a trajectory now, with people at the helm as well who are helping and putting it on the right path that it deserves to be on. It's only going one way, Marie.
Okay, well, I mentioned we were going to go around the grounds. We're going to do that now because we're going to hear from Damien O'Mara, and he is at Inchicore for us.
And it's a season which starts with very strong expectation for the home fans here in Inchicore. 9 consecutive league wins, 12 games unbeaten in all competitions, saw Pats unquestionably finish 2024 as the form team in the league. Many around here will be hoping they can have a strong start to the season, something that's escaped them in recent years, if they're to justify their inclusion amongst the sides who can be considered as strong league contenders. Stephen Kenny has a full pre-season with the bulk of the squad who finished 2024. The inclusion or the recruitment of players like Sean Hoare will bring with it much needed experience as what's required to bring silverware back to the club. He joins from Shamrock Rovers. Mason Melia, destined for Spurs next January, the million-euro man will miss out tonight. He has a back complaint which has been managed. Chris Forrester's ability to train this week has been curtailed due to illness. Keen Levy, though, is a big loss. He's set for 2 months on the sideline as a result of ankle ligament surgery. It was a roller coaster end to 2024 for Drogheda United. An FAI Cup success followed 6 days later by a relegation playoff victory over Bray. They've gone to full-time football, but perhaps something that hasn't brought with it the recruitment that some might have expected. Crucially, the departure, the absence of Franz Piero and Adam Foley from last year's squad denies them some killer instinct at the top end of the field. It could be a long season in store for Kevin Doherty and his charges. Kickoff here at Richmond Park is at 7:45.
So that St. Pat's Drogheda game will tell us probably quite a lot, really, of how these two teams are going to set up. Is that a fair statement? It's going to be a long season for Kevin Doherty. Al, I know you're friends with him.
Yeah, I think it will. I saw them last week in the President's Cup, and I wouldn't agree totally with Damien. Just the recruitment has been okay. Conor Keeley has come in, the young lad up top from Swansea as well. He's strengthened in midfield, also getting Paul Doyle in. So I think the recruitment's been okay. It's just what they're competing with and the resources of the other clubs, and that's been the problem. They'll also help them that they're gone full time, but I think they've a tough ask starting off against St. Pat's. I think St. Pat's are going to be right there in the mix. They've strengthened in the off season. Everybody knows the form that they were in towards the end of last season. They brought in Sean Hoare, Simon Power. You look at Romal Palmer's there now full time. Aidan Keane as well, I think, who came in mid season last year. They look to him to score the goals. Conor Carty as well. Barry Bagley, an excellent midfielder all summer. Watch out for him. I think he'll have a big season for Pats on top of the quality that they've already had with Forrester and Lennon and El Bezzetti and the like. So I think Pats will be banged there. So I can see 4 or 5 in the mix, and I can also see 4 or 5 battling out down near the bottom. I think it'll be a very, very competitive Premier Division this year, Marie, and I don't really see the likes of Drogheda being tailed off. I think they'll be down there fighting with the likes of maybe Cork. Tony won't like me to say it, but I'll also throw Sligo into the mix as well. I think it might be a tough season for them, so there'll be 3 or 4 down the bottom fighting it out, and I think you'll have 3 or 4 at the top fighting it out.
So Tony, opening night, give us your prediction. Who will win the league?
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, you see, I'm
writing this down now.
I mentioned earlier that a lot of people were tipping. I was actually thrilled for St. Pat's thrilled for them that and Stephen Kenny in particular, that they did so well last season, because I think, you know, his reputation needed to be rehabilitated, unfortunately, after the Ireland gig. It sometimes is the case that you don't go back into football for a long time. He was picking and choosing where he was going to go to work. And some might have seen going back to the League of Ireland as a step down, despite how long the contract was being offered. But he's proven already that, you know, he has the chops, he has what it takes. And they'll certainly be there or thereabouts. I do wonder, you know, if St. Pat's, with the wingers Melrani and Elbazedi, if it wasn't in Chicor they were playing every second week, if they were playing out of Talla, would it be a more effective playground for them to, you know, to do their stuff? But when I look at what Rovers did last night, I have to say that, you know, despite the fact that, you know, Shelburne will be wanting to hold on to their title and Damien Duff has added to the squad, I can see Shamrock Rovers coming back and doing it again.
So you're saying Shamrock Rovers then, Tony?
Yeah, I would agree as well, Marie. I think it'd be brilliant. I think it could be the best title race we've had in years. But I think looking at Shamrock Rovers even last night, and not just last night, just the quality that they have and the strength and depth, I think Danny Grant will be a good signing for them as well. Healy in the midfield, as I said, Young Noonan now. So, yeah, it's going to be very, very difficult. But I do think you have Pats and I think it'll be very, very tight. And I would throw Derry into it. I think they've signed well. I know, as I said, people were questioning a couple of those, but you need a bit of experience as well, Marie. That's where Derry were probably found out a little bit last year towards the end of the season. The biggest problem for Derry, as I always say, is that pitch. And that's a big problem, that Astro pitch into Brandywell. But certainly in terms of the teams with the chances, three or four, as I say, but I'm probably just edging towards Shamrock Rovers.
Okay, well, we've lost Tony now, so are we pinning him to Shamrock Rovers? I think that's what
Tony definitely said Shamrock Rovers, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We're going to take a very quick break. Do stay with us, though, because Brendan Devaney is standing by and he's going to set us up for another intriguing weekend of the Allianz Football League. RTE 2FM. Now we're turning our attention to Gaelic football. I'm delighted to say that Brendan Devaney is with us on the line. Brendan, I know it's a big weekend for Gaelic football, but you're a League of Ireland fan as well.
I am indeed, Marie, that's for sure. I was lucky enough to play in it. I didn't have the skills of Fallon there, of course, you know, just a humble kind of worker type player, but it's barely
We need them as well, Brendan. You need them in the team.
That's a joke, by the way, Colin. Don't be blind. I'm not on the pitch just to give the ball to the boys at you, but Finn Harps are going to play Kerry, right? And it's an up and down in one go. Go down, play the game, back up. I only remember doing that once with Harps. We went down to play Cove. It was an absolute monster of the day. And we left, I think, about, say, 9 in the morning. We were back about 4:30 or 5 a.m. Listen, so spare thought for the Division 1 guys.
That's the one thing I don't miss is the journeys. And we were okay. I was generally travelling from Dublin most of the time, so it was always 2 or 3 hours. But I've often wondered, Brendan, that trip from Ballybuffet the whole way down the other end of the country, that's a nightmare. Yeah.
Do you know what, Dan? See, when I went to play in the Irish League then, I couldn't believe myself, because you actually, in a strange way, see, when you're used to it and it just is what it is, you just do get on with it. We plenty of crack in the bus, you know, a few tins on the way home and what have you. But once I went to play in the Irish League, I was like, wow, every game you were like an hour away and you were back. And I thought, this is class. So, yeah, listen, it's a trek. I think, particularly when you're younger, it didn't bore me too much. I wouldn't fancy it now, lad.
Yeah, it's definitely not as glamorous as it may seem, but there are some.
Sorry, Marie. Yeah. And on the sport end of it, it's a major disadvantage as well in terms of the recovery and stuff. Every second week you're away doing a long haul journey, like.
Yes, certainly. When the fitness levels go up now, as you say, all those things are counting a lot more now. And it certainly is a disadvantage for a team, because particularly with this, if you're going to sit in the bus and try and perform, and as you say, come back home, try and recover. Because I heard their manager on an interview there this evening. He was just on about they have some kind of session on a Thursday night as well in it, and he was saying just the time frames of it. And I was like, God, that's going to be a tough one. But sure, listen, it's the first game, so maybe it isn't bad. It's the first game.
Yeah, but you wouldn't. Yeah, doing it all the time, it is difficult. It doesn't happen in Division 1 of the Allianz League, though. It's all nice hotels for these Gaelic footballers, isn't it, Brendan?
The GPA Stollard, happy for you.
Dublin, I'm sure, will not be doing the round trip to Kerry at the weekend in one day. I'm sure they'll get a hotel somewhere along the way. But it is a big one, this Dublin-Kerry, because it's a storied rivalry, and it's the two teams that everybody really likes to see. But they're not the two teams maybe that they have been in the past, are they, Brendan? We'll see a lot. We might learn a little bit from this game at the weekend.
Yeah, certainly big changes. Maurice, certainly not the formidable forces they were, you know, both with question marks about who's going to come back in, who's going to bolster the squad. So both are looking to the new talent there. They're both sitting on 2 points. So, Maurice, this is such a dangerous league in terms of, you know, if you lose a match or you're under pressure, you're going to play somebody else who is desperate for them points as well. So both these teams really need this victory. And I think for Jack O'Connor against Donegal, I think he called the difference in the game, 2 pointers. Donegal got 3. And they only got 1, such was the protection of the arc that Donegal were doing. They hit the 5 goals, but a smash and grab against Derry. Maybe a bit lucky then, so many, because they could be sitting on no points. You know, really impressed with Conor Guinea inside. Jason Foley, you know, and Jeremy O'Connor were unbelievable the last day. So, listen, a big job for a lot of people to step up under that role. And obviously, they're waiting for the return of the man himself, the main marksman inside Clifford. You know, Paddy's brothers having a great game. So, Dublin, having seen them in the flesh as well, the question marks if Conor Killen is going to come back this year. Now, Maria, you might have heard that. You know, Killian McGuinness, I thought, was very good for him that night. Sean McMahon, man marker. So, you know, young Lucas Brathnick, they come on there, very impressed with him as well. So they did lose 3 players to injury. So it's a chance for a lot of people to put their hand up. And I think of all the teams, Dublin, no one seems to mind they're in a bit of transition. I think it's more of an important year for Kerry, particularly trying to get the best of these new rules.
Yeah, definitely, because there is a sense that the calibre player that they have in the team haven't maybe achieved in terms of silverware or fulfilled the potential that we'd associate with some of the best players in the game. But interestingly, the common denominator with the Kerry and Dublin team is that they have suffered defeats at the hands of Donegal.
Yes, indeed. And now we welcome the All-Ireland champions, would you believe it, and Ballybuffet. So, yeah, it's been a good start for Donegal. They're very cute in how they've played the rules, Marie. You know, I just see looking at the different divisions, there seems to be different football going on in different divisions, particularly outside of Division 1. Division 1, to me, still is very, very possession-based, which, listen, it's the way a lot of games are. You know, top sports are. Everybody wants to hold possession. But the main battle now is out around the midfield. Now, Donegal, even with missing some of their main midfield generals, managed to break even enough in the last couple of games to go on and win it. And, you know, subs have been huge. McBurdy come on that night against Dublin, and then Jamie Brennan come on against Kerry. And they were the difference, because the game is so fast and it's opening up, and you can see players fatiguing, particularly now as they kind of get up the match fitness.
Yeah, the midfield battle has been fascinating, definitely. And you mentioned yourself, it's the personnel that teams need. But when you look at Donegal and Armagh, they do seem like two teams that have adapted quite well to, they seem to know what they're doing when it comes to these new rules. And you can't say that for every team, really, can you?
Yeah, I think maybe they've really kind of tried to keep maybe last year's tactics and just, you know, do what they can, try and get the best from the rules. But they certainly haven't looked to be too open. You know, Donegal is still playing a very defensively smart game. The kick pass that we thought was coming inside just doesn't happen, because players are funneling back, so you can't kick it in. I mean, we had ideas of these big kick balls. I mean, Kerry tried it once in the first half. I remember Ryan McHugh had just got back in and got a hand at it, and I thought, there you go, but the risk reward. But you're right, I mean, the battle in midfield, of course, Armagh have loads of big men, and Donegal are missing, you know, a couple of theirs. Langham off the last day injured, you know, Jason McGee, even the possibility of likes of a Murphy being used out there. But, you know, Ethan Rafferty was putting nets after the Galway game. You know, scored 5 points, which is, he was the second highest scorer after Mernon. He got 1-4. So Donegal haven't dealt with a keeper like that yet, because, you know, Shane Ryan did come out from Kerry to a bit of effect, but never really pushed it. And Sheridan came out from Dublin, but didn't get involved. So this is a whole new prospect for Donegal now, because when they sat in that defensive shape that he did against Kerry, Ethan Rafferty's going to be coming bombing out the pitch, and he is a danger.
You have some lovely kickers, though, of the ball.
Donegal?
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. Listen, every one of the players is very, very comfortable on the ball. We've just seen, I mean, the likes of Shane O'Donnell there and Pádraig Mógán coming on. You can't, the fitness, they're just up and down the pitch. A big Kieran Moore, because players have been isolated one-on-one, they can literally run the length of the pitch with the ball. And what I've noticed actually against Kerry a few times, they've run it. And because the extra cover isn't there, they stand up the player and then they just go again. And such is the fitness level, these guys and the possibilities for them. And say Ryan McHugh was just absolutely sparkling down there against Kerry as well. So because you end up one-on-one, these guys, generally as we're saying about midfield, if you won the ball, you're in possession of the game, and by and large, you're more likely going to get a shot away. So the whole game now is hinging on the kick out, and you can't, there wasn't like last year, it's very hard to get the pinged kick out to like half back type area. There's too many players involved. So it really is coming down to ability to one ball and one breaking ball in the middle. There's a massive say in the game.
Yeah, it's really enjoyable, I have to say, just what we're seeing and the skills of the game that we know were there and maybe haven't been given the platform for quite some time to be on display. But it's super stuff. But sitting at the top of the table, though, are Galway, and they're going to be hosting, or they're going to go to Celtic Park to play Derry on Saturday evening. What are you expecting from this one, Brendan?
Yeah, Galway sitting pretty. Of all the teams you mentioned there, they seem to have the mix of it, you know, of defensive attacking ability, you know, attacking from the half-back line, the big men at the middle. And then inside, they've just got so much danger. And if the ball's rotated, you know, unbelievable backroom team and all. Of course, Keane O'Neill going to Kerry. But, you know, in comes David Morris, very highly regarded coach from Curraghfin. Mickey Graham, who was a county coach as well. You know, they joined Joyce, Concan and Dively. So, you know, they outscored Mayo 7-1 and 2-pointers. And there is the damage, you know, Shane Walsh in there, you've the old Corrine lad has come in, he looks like a real talent already, you know, and on the back of that, the likes of McGrath in defence, like what a player he is, what a man marker he is, and just full of energy as well. So they look like they have the mix, and I think you mentioned Kerry at the start there, you know, it's a big, big season for a few teams that maybe could profit from the rules, and I just think the hunger of Galway, having lost those two All-Irelands, like they are desperate to get back there as well, and they look like a team, if they stay injury-free, you would do well to beat them in the championship.
Yeah, they seem to have things figured out pretty early, but it's can they last it for the next few months? That's the thing, without anything going wrong. And Mayo, though, Mayo seem to be in a little bit of bother. They are pointless after two games. We know that they're really struggling when it comes to injury, but the games come thick and fast. And if you don't get points on the board, you can be in a bit of trouble. But I guess Tyrone is probably an opportunity for them to try and get that win.
Yeah, two teams really just struggling for a bit of form. Obviously, Throne lads with the Derek O'Kearn lads away, it's going to make such a huge difference to them. So, you know, they did late 1-4 against Derry, which he thought, there's Malachy O'Rourke working the magic already. But then Armagh come out, completely rubbed through them. Now, they did come back into the game. They did show a bit of bottle, but the game was over, basically. So, yeah, listen, this is two teams that, again, should they lose this, certainly Mayo, it's an absolute must-win for them. You know, Tyrone have a couple of points on the board. So this is going to be hugely interesting. Obviously, you know, an old money against Galway, they lost 19-15. It's a two-pointer, so it's killing them, Marie. You know, you're conceding 7-1. The game's going to completely run away from you. So it's those types of scores they have to find a way of playing. That said, you know, Jamie O'Connor obviously injured most of last year, went off after 9 minutes. You know, I hope he recovers all right. You have Jordan Flynn, Jack Kearney, Caden O'Shea, Jack Coyne, Conroy Durgan. You have a pile of guys to come back in. So I still think Mayo could pull it together for the championship and be dangerous, but it just looks like the league of all teams would be struggling a wee bit with the rules. And again, you're looking for long-range kickers. And if you're not going to do that, you really got to protect your own arc. So Mayo aren't doing either thing. And that's the big danger going into this game. Particularly, I mean, Darren McCurry last year was at the reverse fixture, come out and actually blew Mayo away with 8 points. It was an unbelievable performance. That's the type of player Mayo need in their ranks. So it's about, if they can't get enough scores at one end, really they have to get better defensively. You can't be, you know, feeling it at either end. And that's what's cost them, you know, dearly in the Galway game. They were unlucky against Dublin, but as we're seeing, Dublin, you know, are very much, you know, in transition as well. So this is a massive game for these two teams.
I know when you're coaching, it's very difficult to perfect everything at the same time. If you were an intercounty coach now, what would you be focusing on getting right, Brendan?
Yeah, I mean, well, we've never seen anything this. There's the seven rules, you know.
It's a lot.
Now, the table goes flying. You know, people like the kick out in terms of the one that should be just squeeze on up, so it would allow room maybe for what we thought might be high feeling out the pitch isn't, because there's too many players out there. Then what we thought might be more kick passing hasn't, what I've seen now of Division 1 in particular, hasn't happened because players are so good in the ball. They're working it up the pitch, and when it's 11v11, they will get in and around somewhere. So there's been brilliant aspects to the rules in terms of the speed of the game, the tap and go, the higher scoring. All that there has been progressive. I think the 12v11 still is a worry in terms of the keeper coming out. And it'll be fascinating to see Ethan Raverty at the weekend. So there's a mixed bag in there. Certainly the game is much more interesting. It's much faster. But I think very much now, because you were never going to know how the rules were going to sit until we're only a couple of games in. Now, as we get towards the latter stages of the league, we've got to decide what exactly we want to keep. I mean, a lot of people saying, you know, 4 points maybe for a goal, because you know, sadly, some of the last day they conceded a goal and down the pitch and they got a two-pointer straight away. They almost wiped out the goal. So I don't think the goal is enough now if we hold on to 2 points. So a lot of stuff to be done for the FRC. But listen, they're trying, Marie.
The game
was going down to Swanee. I thought previously, like, we were clinging on to whatever love of the game we could muster up. There certainly is a lot more action in it now, but not the way we thought it would be. And it's very interesting how tactically teams now are looking to stop the rules working against them. And this is what's going on. You have a lot of smart people out there that are like, hold on a second, we're not going to give away this, we're not going to give away that. So I know Jim Gavin would just love kick pass in the end, and we would love a portion of that. But really, I think teams are way too smart and coached to be ever too open. So it's about getting the balance right now, Emery. But certainly we're learning week on week.
Yeah, and I think you nearly have to be in it and realise what you're up against before you know what to do as well, because it's one thing doing it in training and everybody kind of working off the same hymn sheet almost, but when you've got contrasting views on what the right thing to do or what best practice is, then you actually figure out, well, this works for us, or we've got a player that will be able to capitalise on this rule and that. So it's ever changing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, ever-changing. I mean, we have a backdrop as well, of course, of the fitness levels going up as well. And I'm just a wee bit, you know, as much as we heard about the GPA and the money thing, and that, to me, I think there's too much pressure on our players, you know. There's too much pressure on them for training and for a complete, like, you know, your life given to the team, which I respect. But I still think, here, hold on, you know, you can through your 20s there. You know, you should be kicking it back, you know, out in your fancy white suit the way Collie used to be on a Saturday night there after notching one and setting up one or whatever. But, you know, you got to enjoy your life as well. And I just think that, to me, my bigger fear for them now, particularly now again, is fitness levels seem to be going up and need to be going up. We're really putting so much pressure on our players. We have condensed season as well. So, you know, that's the side of it, rather than, you know, people on about is there out of extra pocket. To me, it's too much pressure on guys' lives. And if you play with a good club team, you know, you're into the whole year, and it's such demands on you. And I just think sometimes, here, hold on a second. You know, as we are an amateur organisation, we need to take care of that side of it, would be my biggest worry, Marie. And the new rules is playing a wee part in that as well. But listen, I'm glad they're in.
Yeah. Balance. I think that's what it's life is all about. Brendan Devaney, thank you for spending your Valentine's Day with myself and Alan Cawley as well. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brendan.
See you next week. Thanks. Bye. RTE 2FM. Now, welcome back. We are turning our attention to the Premier League. Alan Cawley has stuck around for another little while before he shoots off to Tulke Park. I'm delighted to say that Fergal Brennan, journalist on Merseyside, also joins us. Fergal, before we get into the fixtures this weekend, there's a little bit of news about Everton, Liverpool and Arne Slot and their antics at the end of Wednesday's Merseyside derby at Goodison Park. They've been charged, have they?
They have. So the latest update is that Arne Slot, Liverpool and Everton have all been charged with inappropriate behaviour. The clubs in relation to failure to control their players, and Arne Slot for his slightly controversial handshake with Michael Oliver at the end of the game. That's as it stands. Arne Slot will be in place for the Wolves game at the weekend. There's every chance that the ban will be updated before that game, so he would get hit with a touchline suspension. But at the moment, he will be in place for that game.
Alan, do you think it's deserved that they are in a little bit of trouble?
Yeah, well, it was the obvious reaction from the FA because of the scenes that we've seen at the end of the game. But I absolutely loved it, Marie. That's what we need to see, a bit of passion and Curtis Jones going over, getting involved. I had no issues with it whatsoever. It actually showed that the players care, the nature of the game as well, the rivalry, the last game at Goodison, the way the game played out, the equaliser in injury time. I thought it was a brilliant night for football in general. And once they don't overstep the mark, of course, Slot, maybe whatever was said, I don't know. They're saying it might have been a kind of a strong handshake. I'm not sure. Only Michael Oliver will be able to tell us that. And they may get kind of some sort of penalised in some way, a fine or whatever. But I have no issues with anything that I seen Friday on Monday night. It was a brilliant game. Or Wednesday night, sorry.
Fergal, it just shows though now we're at the time of the year where every single game matters and there's no margin for error when you're trying to have success in the club. And this Arsenal-Leicester game on Saturday, tomorrow actually, at 12:30, that it's going to be a big one because the Arsenal and Arteta need to win all of their games.
Absolutely. And obviously the injury issues that are going on at Arsenal at the moment, Kai Havertz has added his name to that list. He'll be out for the rest of the campaign. Leicester are fighting for survival. It's looking like an increasingly difficult job for Ruud van Nistelrooy. But I would completely agree. Arsenal cannot afford to drop points, to drop momentum. Yes, Liverpool only picked up a point against Everton on Wednesday night, but they've still got a really strong lead. They're 7 points clear. And they're in fantastic form, regardless of the result the other night. They are still the team to beat in the Premier League and in the Champions League. Arsenal need pretty much everything to go right for them between now and the end of the season. And it's looking very, very tricky, particularly with the injuries that I mentioned.
It is, Al, isn't it? It looks, I know it's 7 points isn't a lot, but it is still.
Of course it is, especially because you look at, as Fergal said, the way Liverpool are playing. I know they got, there was a slight hiccup at the end the other night, but they're still, that won't derail them. Now they've a busy schedule coming up. I think it was a 5 games of 15 days, and the Villa thrown in there, I think next Wednesday will be a tough game away from home. If they were to get it back to 4, you might give them, but Arsenal nearly need to win, go on an unbelievable run like they did last year, and that still wasn't even enough with Man City. I'm nearly correct in saying after Christmas last year they won 16 out of their 18 games or something like that. They were on an unbelievable run, and they need to do something similar to try and close that gap. And now with the injuries, they've slipped up, Marie. They should have got a centre forward in the summer, not even at Christmas. They should have got one in the summer, and that was sticking out like a sore thumb, because that everything else in place, defensively, midfield, everything else was in place. They needed a centre forward badly, for whatever reason they didn't get one, and now it's coming back to bite them in the backside, because Havertz now was out injured as well, and he's not even the answer in terms of a centre forward either, but they were getting by just about with him, and now he's out as well, so they've major problems up front.
Yeah, and they're hoping then, Fergal, that Liverpool might slip up a little bit more often than they have been. Will they do that against Wolves on Sunday?
I can't really see it, to be perfectly honest. Again, we go back to the Derby results. It's such a freakish situation that they find themselves in. Liverpool didn't put in the type of performance that we're used to seeing them do so far this season. You'd fully expect a reaction back at home. Other than that Nottingham Forest game, right at the beginning of the campaign, they've been perfect at Anfield. Regardless of whether or not the ban is updated in relation to Arne Slot, I don't think it will make a great deal of difference. Liverpool will want a reaction. They're obviously in that position at the moment where they don't have to worry about Champions League playoffs, so they can go fully into this game, get the win that they need, and ensure that almost regardless of how Arsenal get on, they still maintain that advantage that they've got.
One thing, Maria, from looking at the game the other night, I'm not sure if Fergal agrees, but the template to get at Liverpool, Everton, now I know it was obviously the occasion as well, and they were so revved up. But the two big boys up front, Doucouré and Beto in particular, caused Van Dijk and Kanate all sorts of problems, and how direct Everton were. Now, I know in the modern game, not all the teams play like that. But if you were going to face Liverpool, why would you take them on and go toe-to-toe and think we can? Because you're not going to outplay them. And when you sit off them or try and press them, they'll play around you, they'll play through you. And that's what we've seen all season. But the other night, Everton caused them all sorts of problems by being direct and just being in their faces and all. And it might be something for teams going forward if there's anyone going to get at Liverpool. But I do think, in terms of the template, that was something that Everton showed the other night.
Yeah, a bit of old school tactics. Will the Manchester United Spurs game be Ange Postecoglou's last stand, do you think, Fergal?
Possibly. And if not, I think it'll certainly push him closer to the exit door. These are two teams falling below expectations this season. They're both still in a position, thanks to the Europa League. Obviously, sorry, Man United still have the FA Cup as well, where they could get themselves into a position where they could win a trophy. But Tottenham, it's just not working. And I think most importantly, there doesn't seem to be any sort of a reaction. You go back to the Carabao Cup defeat to Liverpool. They then had an opportunity in the FA Cup to shake themselves from that, to bounce back, to show some steel. And they just weren't good enough, purely and simply. Aston Villa are a really good team, yes. But every time I watch Tottenham, I'm waiting for some sort of a reaction from the players, from Postecoglou himself, and it just doesn't seem to be happening. They do have issues, they do have injuries. But I watch them and I think if they concede a goal, they're not coming back in any sort of a situation. And I ultimately think he, as the manager, will end up paying the price. Whether it will be before the end of the season, there's still a little bit of flexibility there. But I think if they get knocked out of the Europa League, I think he could be gone before the end of the campaign, which would be frustrating for him. I don't think the entire situation falls on his shoulders, but there's been a lot of situations that he could have improved and he just hasn't done it.
Al?
I'm sick of Postecoglou, to be honest with you, Marie. The nonsense and the injuries and all that, and crying about the injuries every week. Yet he never adjusts anything. He never changes the approach. He never changes. Once he changed the formation against Everton, they were a shambles. The setup of the team is the same every week. Wide open. They conceded a goal after 60 seconds against Villa the other night. So they've been an absolute shambles all year. Every time I watch them, and it's not even against the top teams. Even against the weaker teams, they've been a shambles. And then he's coming out crying about injuries and all. I'm sick of him.
Okay, well, it could be a case that they score 5 goals against Manchester United at the weekend, and he's asking, are you not entertained? We'll have to wait and see.
But they're not even good at that anymore.
No. Thanks so much for coming into the studio. We're going to take one more very quick break, but then we're going to hear from Jane Mangan. She's going to set us up for the weekend's racing.
RTE 2FM. Entertainment on 2FM.
Don't miss the last ever Irish tour of the smash hit comedy Menopause the Musical 2. Hop on board our cruise ship with original Irish girl band singing sensation Maureen Nolan, with EastEnders, Doctors, Hollyoaks and Casualty stars Carly Norris and Rebecca Wheatley. Menopause the Musical 2, starring Maureen Nolan at the Gaiety Theatre from Tuesday the 25th to Saturday the 29th of March. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie.
Entertainment on 2FM.
The Philly Cheese Stack is back at McDonald's with two beef patties,
yeah,
crispy and grilled onions.
So crispy.
Cheddar cheese.
Ooh, cheese.
All topped with a melted cheddar cheese sauce.
Obsessed.
The Philly Cheese Stack, one for the cheese lovers. Available until the 6th of May, served after 11 a.m. Participating restaurants only, subject to availability.
Switch to 3 and get the super smart, super fast iPhone 16 from as little as €0 upfront when you trade in. Switch in store or visit 3.ie today. 3, Ireland's fastest 5G network. Based on Ookla speed test H2 2024. Subject to trade in minimum acceptance criteria and annual price increase of CPI plus 3% on 3 Freedom 5G plan. 24-month minimum term and direct debit apply. See 3.ie for details.
The infection felt terrible. I just wasn't getting better. I was breathing fast and I felt confused. I had shivers and pain through my body. I was drinking water, but I wasn't peeing. I felt like I was going to die. In the hospital, they said I had sepsis, and it's urgent.
Sepsis can hide behind any infection at any age, so watch out for the signs. Visit hse.ie/sepsis for more information. And don't be afraid to ask the question, could it be sepsis? From the HSE.
Harvey Norman, your sleep specialists. Discover value deals across our range of motion bases, motion mattresses and bedroom ranges. Experience pure relaxation with our motion bases starting from $1099. Enjoy 20% off motion compatible mattresses when you purchase a motion base. 3 for $2 on selected bedroom ranges, a deal you won't want to miss. Plus, buy one, get one free on selected towels. With up to 36 months interest-free finance available, why wait? Harvey Norman, your sleep specialist.
Minimum spend, terms and conditions apply. I see in store for details.
You're going to Paris. You've won.
The Laura Fox Show.
We got to meet the gorgeous couples who entered our Valentine's Day competition.
Kevin and Emma, congratulations. What, are you okay?
Emma has come off a night shift in Holles Street and she's come straight into the studio. Kevin had a lovely overnight stay for himself, so you're not one bit stressed out.
It's 2FM.
We'll chat to you Monday from 9.
The Laura Fox Show. Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.
It's almost 7 o'clock on 2FM with Vitabiotics. The Menopause range provides nutritional support during and after menopause, including active botanicals, calcium and vitamin B6.
Game on.
Racing.
Now we're turning our attention to racing. I'm delighted to say that Jane Mangan is with us, as she is every Friday. Jane, it sounds like you're out in the wilderness somewhere. I can hear birds chirping.
The wilderness being just the yard. I'm sitting outside a stable door. There's a lovely stretch in the evening.
Yeah, there really is, actually. It's brilliant to see. Good for racing too, I'd imagine. And although the weather this weekend, we're getting a lot of rain. How is it going to affect what's happening here, Jane?
Rain won't be a problem. These are National Hunt horses. They're bred to handle slow ground. And I think at Goran Park and Punchestown this weekend in particular, it won't be an issue because they've got very good quality cards declared. I'll be at Goran Park tomorrow for Racing TV, where there's a pair of graded races, including the Red Mills Trial Hurdle, which is a 2 mile grade 3 event. And I'm very excited to see Kitzbühel make his second stable start for Willie Mullins. Having come from France with a bit of a reputation, he really consolidated that reputation by making all when he made his Irish debut at Punchestown. Could he be a champion hurdle type of horse? We're probably not going to find out this weekend, but we're going to find out
whether he's up to going to the festival and where he might slot in. He's in against Sir Gerhard and Beacon Edge. That's a six-runner race due off at 5-2 tomorrow. The Red Mills Chase on the same card has, for me, it's kind of attracted a disappointing field. Three-runner field, Journey With Me, last year's winner St. Sam, a classic getaway. Yes, they're all rated over 150, but it's just a little bit disappointing that there isn't more runners in the race. I actually think the Beginner's Chase a little bit later on is the one that I'm most looking forward to. You've got What's Up Darling, Blizzard of Oz, Lisnagar Fortune, quite a good quality field attracted for that. And that's before we turn our attention to Punchestown on Sunday, which features the Grand National Trial. I was over in Liverpool on Tuesday with Abe Chamberlain, and we lifted the curtain on the Aintree Grand National Trial weights. And there'll be a horse or two in this hoping to throw their hat into that ring. Scottish Grand National winner Mac Dermott is in there. Max Charm for Rachel Blackmore and Cullum Murphy. Willie Mullins has any number of entries. And I think Gordon Elliott has a strong hand with Favre de Chandu, Cletus Poulaw and Fortune de Fortunata. But I think one horse that's going to run a good race, given how well he ran in the Thiestes Chase in Gorham Park, is Oliver McKiernan's Bushman's Pass. I think he'll have no issue with the 3.5 mile test. Philip Enright's booked and he's got a lightweight, so he might be one for the small men in Punchestown.
Very good. But the big race, of course, is at Ascot, the feature race of the weekend, and that is going to feature Corbett's Cross as well, a horse that's very familiar to many of us.
Yeah, he's obviously a Cheltenham Festival winner from last year. He's on a couple of shortlists for the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and this is likely to be his last run before then. He's currently second favourite. It's a 2.5 mile event, so maybe some people thinking that it's not going to be enough of a stamina test for him, but obviously Mark Welsh and Emmett Mullins don't agree with that. They're in at second favourite behind Pic Dory. L'Empresse is the horse I kind of fancy in that, given how well he ran in the King George at Christmas, and he won well last time at Cheltenham. Blue Lord in there for Willie Mullins and JJ Slevin as well. That is a Grade 1 race. It's quite a good event, but it's unusual timing. The other race I want to mention before we go is the there's another national trial that's in at Haydock, and there's an Irish favourite in there, courtesy of Yaman, who was a winner at the track last year, and Gavin Cromwell has sent Sean Flanagan over to ride him. He's currently 9-2 favourite for that race. It's 3.5 miles. It's going to be in slow ground, but it's actually only 10 runners in there. Horses like Where It All Began for Gordon Elliott is in there. Royal Pagaya, classy horse. Apple Away, who's probably not going to get into the Aintree edition. That looks like it's going to be a good race. So, yes, the rain is going to come, but every horse that we've mentioned will handle it.
Jane, we are hurtling along towards Cheltenham. Have you seen anyone, anything that has impressed you?
Oh, sure. It's, I think, just over 20 days to go, Marie. And the closer we get, the more, I suppose, pensive a lot of connections get. I saw where Impervious, who was hoping to get back in time for the Cheltenham Festival, has met with a setback and is out. Obviously, we know the Sergino is out of the Arkell now due to a setback. So you're just hoping that all of the horses that are kind of in contention to get there actually now get there, because we're getting to the finer tunings of their preparation. But look, at the moment, it's Constitution Hill for the Champion Hurdle, it's Galloping Deschamps for the Gold Cup, and everything in and around that. You could probably say the same for John Bonn and the Champion Chase. But after the Dublin Racing Festival, I think we learn a lot, particularly with the novices.
Okay, well, look, we'll be no doubt changing minds over the next 20 days or so anyway, Jane. Thank you so much, and look forward to checking in with you again next week. That is it. That is all we have time for this evening. For anyone travelling to the League of Ireland, enjoy it. It is the start of a new season. So much excitement to come. That's it from me here this evening. Blonna Tracy and the Official Chart Show are up next.